welcome to Truth Nation. My name is Bill Bodner. Here with me, the chief, Mr. Mark Garrett. How are you, Mark?
I'm doing great, Bill. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing good, man. This is an interesting topic we're going to talk about today, or almost really two topics, but along the same line. It's digital privacy. What information is being captured from us as we're going about our business on our daily lives? And to start this off, and Mark, I know you're an Android guy, right? You're not an iPhone guy?
Yeah. It's a mixed marriage. My wife is Apple. I'm Android. We don't speak the same language.
I hear you. Yeah, it's probably too late in life for me to transition at this point. But
phones or something else?
I definitely mean phones.
Oh, okay. Make sure.
You know, I'm gonna run through something for people and ask everyone to pick up their iPhone and do this right now. And if someone knows how to do this on the Android side, drop a note in the comments or put some information in there how to do this on the Android side. And the reason I want to do this right up front is it'll give people a glimpse into what your phone is capturing and what it's doing with the information. So on your iPhone, go to settings. And then if you go down to like the third block of different things, you'll see something called privacy and security. Click on that. And then click on locational services. Now, you can kind of go down that whole list of your apps. And anytime you see a small gray arrow, it almost looks like a little paper airplane. Anytime you see that gray arrow, that means in the past 24 hours, that app has captured your location information. And just to give you an idea of what I have up here, Fitbit captured my location recently. Delta Airlines did. Instagram did. The weather app did. So a lot of apps are capturing our information. And sometimes, Mark, when we download an app, we think we're being clever. And it'll ask for access to our location all the time. And we'll say no, only when using the app. What people have to keep in mind is just because, like, let's say it's your online banking app. I use Bank of America. Just because you log out doesn't mean that app is closed. A lot of times we have 10, 15 apps open on our phone in the background. And when we do that, all those apps are collecting information on us. So let's do one other thing now. Go back to settings. And then once again, privacy and security. Go all the way down to the bottom. And there's a reason why this is all the way down at the bottom. They don't want people to see it. Second to last thing, it'll be app privacy report. Click on that and it's going to be turned off by default, right? Turn it on. And you'll be able to see where your phone is sending your information. And I'm going to just put mine up here. I don't know if that'll work too good, but you can see just in the past 24 hours, all the places my phone has sent information about me. And one of the stranger things is the type of access my phone has. For instance, as I look through this, my podcast app accessed my contacts and my photos in the past 24 hours. Why? What does listening to a podcast, how does that require a connection with my photos or my contacts? And the reality is it doesn't. But unless we stop it, people who create apps or people who market apps, they're going to try to get all the data they can from our phone because that data is worth what, Mark? Money. That data is worth money. It's a billion-dollar business. So we're going to talk a little bit about phone location stuff, and then we're going to get into facial recognition technology, how that's being used, especially in law enforcement, but really it's being used all over the place now. So, Mark, I can remember back with DEA in the early 90s when cell phones were analog. They had just come out and there was a device about the size of a textbook and you could sit outside someone's house with this device and capture all the cell phones that were being used inside the house. Really didn't have the ability to track at that time. And moving forward, that was when cell phones were analog. Moving forward, cell phones became digital. The tracking, there's incredible tracking technologies now for cell phones, right? That's the way law enforcement finds a lot of people. But machines cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. You need a court order to use the machine. Very expensive, very restrictive how it can be used. But guess what? What if there's a company, Mark? What if I told you there was a company out there and they bought information just from a couple apps, maybe Uber, so they have Uber Eats, Uber package delivery, Uber passenger, standard passenger stuff, DoorDash, Grubhub. What if a company bought data from just those apps so they would get a phone number? They would see where you are when you're ordering. They would see where your food is getting delivered to. And probably more importantly than any of that stuff, they would have a credit card associated with your account. Mm-hmm. Now, why is that credit card important? It's a verification of identity, right? Mm-hmm. If I say my name's Mark Garrett and I put in a credit card for Bill Bodner, it's not going to work. So that information, that data becomes more valuable when it's associated with a credit card because that gives credence to the fact that it's a real person, a real account. So all of a sudden now I can buy for pennies information about really where someone lives. If all I have is a phone number, I can buy the data and see where they're getting food delivered to at 8 o'clock at night, where they're going to when they're picked up at the airport. And guess what? No court order required, available for a few cents. This type of data out there available for a few cents. When you hear about that and you see all the information that, and people, Mark, I really think a lot of it is people don't know that they're providing access to this information. It's become such a cloudy world of opt out, opt in, I allow, I don't allow while open. Does a human have a God-given right to their own data? I think that's a very basic question to start off with. Is data something that you have the right to and you should have the ownership to and be explicitly asked if you're okay with selling that data or giving up that data?
Yeah, it's a great question. Obviously, this is a philosophical question. It's a legal question, personal question. Bill, you touched on some stuff there so important about DoorDash delivering to a certain address, things like that. And really what the big picture is here, that these companies, these providers are building an overall profile, building a lifestyle profile of hundreds of millions, billions of people around the world. And it, of course, some of this is it's just business. It's just the attempt to market and to influence. Nothing different in that sense than it's been for thousands of years when you're trying to get someone to buy something, trying to sell something. That's not new. What's new is the reach and the intimacy that these companies have now and how intrusive all of this is. Question about, do we have a right to our data? Of course, the simple answer is yes. But like you said, all these quick, allow, don't allow, only when I'm using the app. And I pulled up an article that talks a little bit about exactly that point you brought up. In other words, are we just getting used to it? Is it getting so prominent, so prevalent, so ubiquitous in every step, in every day of our life? Are we actually just missing out on how regular, how persistent, how much of a part of our daily life this stuff is? In other words, it's just getting to the point where we're unconscious about it now. It's like walking. We don't think about it anymore. And we don't realize that we actually are part of our own problem if we want to secure our privacy. The thing is, if you call somebody with caller ID, you call somebody, they automatically have your phone number. They automatically now know, okay, it's Mark Garrett calling me, unless you have supposedly a block on your number, things like that. So in that sense, you have voluntarily now shared your data because you know that caller ID is a part of our everyday lives now. So to not only a large extent, I would say probably the majority of the time, we are our own worst enemy. Now, the reality is that we are living in a world where it's now more and more difficult to avoid these things. Even if you're being diligent about not providing extra information, ancillary information, or what might think is ancillary, but it's very personal. But even if you're working very hard, it is a very difficult process now not to share your information. I mean, I was just talking to my wife about this the other day, and my 9-year-old son, about communication and about now it's almost impossible to engage in the type of conversations with providers. And the example I was using the other day was healthcare provider, that everything was online. Everything is a message. All these automated systems, all of these platforms that provide medical information and medical updates and your physical, things like this, rather than talking to a provider directly about your lab results and things like this, scheduling all of these for appointments, it's all virtual. It's all virtual. And if you want to get something done, you have to go to these platforms, or you have to drive to the office and talk to someone across the desk, which I prefer to do. I've done quite a few times. My point to all this is that the infrastructure to virtual reality is so huge now, it is almost impossible to avoid it, and we're stuck on it. The question is, in that arena, what are the things that you can do to reduce exposure and to increase your security? I'm not sure I have the answer, but that's the question we have to ask because the reality is we're living in this strange, brave new world.
Yeah, and Mark, I think what I'll add to that is I think maybe we've become numb to how offensive this is. And here's what I mean by that. When on the surface, when you hear about this, right? Oh, your locational data from your cell phone is being taken. And even someone like me says, well, listen, I understand that. I'm going to use Waze. I'm going to use Google Maps. I'm going to use Apple Maps. Obviously, that app has to know where I am in order to have functionality, in order to help me go where I want to go, in order to be effective. So in that sense, I'm thinking like, yeah, I understand why it needs that information. But that's why I encourage people to do those steps I talked about at the beginning of the show, because when you start to see things that make no sense, when you see a podcasting app tracking your location, when you see a podcasting app accessing your photos or your contacts, the question becomes why? What does that have to do with the functionality of the app? And the answer, it has nothing to do with it. What's happened is there's these tools to build apps. I don't know, there's a term for it. I think it's called an SDK, a software development kit, right? So people have made these SDKs available to app builders, and they have built in these kits the ability to track location and track some of these other things. So when an app developer takes this SDK and puts together an app, that app all of a sudden has become an intelligence collector for that library of information, so to speak. And sometimes the app builder may not even know that this information is being queried in there. So let's also talk about the scope of this. Right now, let me see, that the number of companies, I thought it was staggering. So there's 6 companies out there that claim to have data from more than 1 billion phone devices. 6 companies, each of whom says we have data from over 1 billion devices. In essence, this is almost everyone, right? If you're using any kind of apps on your phone, almost everyone is tracked. The New York Times did a story, and it was a number of years ago. I think it was back in 2019. About a data set of 50 billion pings. Now, what a ping is, it's just like one locational data point called a ping. That probably comes from back in the early days of radar, when radar would send a sound off something and it would ping back. They were able to track individual users from location to location and see how long they stayed at each location over a period of several months from 2016 and 2017. This didn't require a court order, Mark. All it required was a checkbook. They just bought some data and they sat down and put it together. The scope of data brokering right now, well, I talked about the 6 companies, but there's really over 50 companies that are in this space that are viable, big data brokers that either create, buy, sell, analyze, repackage. And it's not always above board. And I think sometimes people would be shocked if they heard what was being done with this data. For example, one company collected data from a Muslim prayer app and sold it to a company that contracted for the military. Another sold it to federal agencies for use in immigration enforcement. And another example that was given was someone who bought data for phones tracking around a Tesla plant, and by doing this was tracking the amount of overtime people worked. That's how granular it was. They could see when people showed up for work. They knew what the standard shift was. They knew if people were working doubles, that production, the demand was high, production was going up, and they were using that, hedge funds basically, or maybe not hedge funds, but investment companies, to gauge where demand was for the product, whether how much they should invest, if they should invest. So this is data that's really available everywhere now. And Mark, how about this one? This is one that really troubles me, and it's, I guarantee this is happening right now. Locational data of phones at military bases, right?
Right.
You think this is not packaged up and exploited by the Chinese or by the Russians? In other words, they know, through locational data, they know every phone that's in use on a particular military base. When all of a sudden, Mark, all those phones leave that base and now they appear in Germany, what do they know?
They know that movements.
They know about movement. Whatever capabilities that base has, whether it's a mechanized division, whatever it is, they now know where it is deployed. And hey, a lot of times I get it. People say, no, there's rules, but they're not supposed to bring phones on. So don't think that this isn't being used right now by foreign governments to exploit our capabilities, the movements of our military, and everything else. I mean,
and Bill, let me interject there. Please don't lose your train of thought. But to have a contact with someone who is very involved with the military, and just leave it at that. And a few years ago, a few or so years ago, he was made aware of some cameras that our military was using on a particular base. And when he found out the manufacturer, the type of camera, he alerted the chain of command that these cameras come initially from China. And these cameras, just like your cell phones, these cameras are simply data collection devices. And in a very, thank goodness, short amount of time, those cameras were removed and replaced with something that was secure. The point is that, to your point, that we have to realize that this is not just about civilian activity. This is about global power struggles, military strategies, tactics. And there's no doubt that the Chinese are doing everything they can, and unfortunately are probably very successful at infiltrating even our military.
In the law enforcement use, I guess the troubling thing was, if you're going to get this information from a service provider, right, it would require a warrant. If you were going to go out and use a device to locate this phone, it would require a warrant. But the FBI has acknowledged, Director Wray acknowledged, that the FBI has purchased this type of information in the past. So they got access to something that would normally require a warrant and judicial review, let's call it that, access to very private information that would normally require judicial review. They were able to get that without judicial review. And Mark, let me ask you, why would the FBI want to get locational information without judicial review? Why would any law enforcement agency try to go outside of the judicial review?
Well, unfortunately, the reason is because they think that it may not hold up, it may not warrant a warrant. It may not hold up under judicial review. So they're going to go the path of least resistance and go ahead and punish me for something I do rather than telling me that I can't do it in the first place. That's exactly what they're hoping.
Right. So although I know at DEA, there was a prohibition against using this data, but I also know that it's public now. It's kind of public knowledge that FBI has bought it in the past. They say they are not buying it now. Defense Intelligence Agency has bought this data. Customs and Border Protection has bought this data. And with CBP, I think it came out that they were buying data from benign apps like games and weather. So again, mm-hmm. you hear the weather and you understand, okay, I can see that having a locational aspect to it. You want to know the weather where you are today. You're going to allow access to your GPS. But games, that's one of those ones where that's just built in the app. It's just right. built in the app. It's got nothing to do with the functionality of the app. It's collecting your locational information and then downloading it somewhere for sale, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
Scary stuff. So
it is scary stuff.
You know, there's been legislation to try to address this. I don't know where, I mean, it's gone nowhere. I think it was first introduced in 2011. Geolocation Privacy and Surveillance Act. I don't know if you know anything more about that than I do. I just know it was proposed in 2011 and it never made it through committee, to my knowledge. It's really gone nowhere. But again, like most things, the government a little behind the times in understanding. I'm not saying we need laws about this to regulate it, but we sure need to understand and what's happening, and people need to have better tools to protect themselves. It should not be a system where the default is you give up everything.
Yeah.
You give up all your personal information. And believe it or not, the thing that really got me thinking about this, Mark, I saw an interview with Will.i.am, the musician.
Yeah.
And he spoke about this question, is do you have the God-given right to your likeness, to your voice, to your data? Even social media apps, they own a tremendous amount of data about us that even we don't have. We don't have access to that data, and they own that data, which was derived from us. So I don't know where this space is going, but my advice to people is be diligent in what permissions you allow on your phone, and understand that just because you're not using that app right at the moment, that doesn't mean you've closed it. So right. if it's opened in the background, it's still collecting information if you've allowed it to, right?
Yeah.
Anything else on location, Mark?
Just that the open in the background, running in the background mm-hmm. is a big one, because fortunately, my antiquated, outdated, inefficient Android, it still does give me update. It'll give me notifications, hey, you have X amount of apps running in the background, and we recommend you shut them down. Which actually, sometimes when I do see that, it pleasantly surprises me. It's like, hey, mm-hmm. they're letting me know the stuff running and turn it off. You're not using it, things like that. So it is good. That 2011 legislation you talked about, that struck a nerve, because I'm going through my articles here. I actually read a little bit about that recently. And you're right. I don't think anything became of it about protecting privacy and addressing these issues you talked about, Bill. I think one of the problems is, one of the realities we all have to accept is that the technology, it changes so fast. It really is, I think, a legal arms race, just like a traditional arms race, that one side, and this side is technology, is business, is always trying to be in front of whatever legislation is on the back burner. And now we're dealing with AI, and you talk about images and voice recognition, mm-hmm. things like this. It is literally light speed now. And of course, the way that Congress works, it's kind of the opposite of light speed. So yeah, that's what we're dealing with. It's incumbent, as you opened up with this, about how to utilize your phone to reduce some of the exposure. It's incumbent upon all of us to realize that we are our best and most immediate protection against these things. And at least, like you said, Bill, at least be aware of what's going on. So I think that's the best that we can do right now, unfortunately. But I know you wanted to get to another topic here, kind of related, but a broader topic about recognition, facial recognition. And
just to close out the phone, like I could sit here right now and say, well, I'm not using my phone right now, right? It's sitting on the desk in front of me. I'm not using it, so the apps shouldn't be collecting information. But again, you know, I've said it three times, but I'll say it again. I just looked while you were talking. I have about 25 different apps open on there that I haven't closed out from the past day. And each one of them is collecting. My Bank of America was collecting locational information within the past 24 hours from me. I wasn't looking for
why.
I wasn't looking for an ATM or a branch. I was maybe checking my balance or something.
I think it's fair to say that you may not be using your phone, but your phone's using you.
That's it. All right. Facial recognition. the other side of what we own and what we don't own. And by the way, you know, I kind of laugh when I hear people say, like, well, you know, they don't think they're in a facial recognition database. If you have flown, if you have flown and you've gone to the airport through TSA and you stood in front of a camera and handed them your ID and they scanned your ID, guess what? You're in the database, folks. 100%. There's a facial map of you, a facial signature in the U.S. government database. And anytime there's a significant crime, they're comparing your picture to the suspect. Mark, right now, 25% or more of the 18,000 law enforcement agencies in the U.S. use some kind of facial recognition. And I guess basically what is it? It's the input of a photo or even video, right?
Mm-hmm.
A computer creates a facial map or facial signature of that person, and then it's stored in a database, and it's compared against driver's license photos, booking photos. Like I said, TSA photos now, right? TSA mm-hmm. has a huge database. But also, there are independent companies out there that scour social media and rip pictures of people, right? When I say rip, I just mean collect, grab pictures of people with identifying information, package them up, and sell them so that you may be identified from a picture you put on social media a couple years ago. It's possible that could cause a hit or whatever. In 2020, Florida, Mark, was doing 8,000 facial recognition searches a month. So that's 4 years ago. I got to think it's gone up quite a bit since then. And at that time, they had 11 million mugshots, 22 million driver's license photos in their database. And that doesn't even discuss what's out there from social media. Tell me what your thoughts are on facial recognition. And is it something that it's like, hey, if you're out in public, you have no expectation of privacy? And here's the thing about it. We can talk about this more in a minute, but it's not perfect. It's not 100% perfect. I've seen a iPhone that belonged to, let's say, a 60-year-old man. His daughter, who was 30-ish, mm-hmm. her facial signature would unlock that iPhone.
Yeah.
And how would that happen? I don't know how. I guess an algorithm or the structure or the relationship of different points on the face, even though they looked a little similar, but scientifically or mathematically, there was enough of a similarity that it unlocked the phone.
Yeah. I have an article here. It's a few years old. It's August 2021, so 2.5 years. By Nigel Jones, co-founder of the Privacy Compliance Hub. So I can read, this is from Great Britain, but this goes exactly to what you were just addressing. In South Wales, police testing a facial recognition system saw 91% of matches labeled as false positives. As the system made 2,451 incorrect identifications and only 234 correct ones when matching a face to a name on the watch list. Similarly, in New York City, the transit authority halted a pilot that had a 100% error rate. Facial recognition tools work a lot better than in the lab may do in the real world. Small factors such as light, shade, and how the image is captured affect mm-hmm. the result. Now, again, this is 2.5 years ago. I would imagine technology is better. However, the implications of even a 50 or 25% inaccuracy rate, false positive, is enormous when you're talking about the lives of individual people. Your question, Bill, about do we have a right to our image? Do we have a right to privacy when we're walking on the sidewalk in New York City? Actually, the question is, do we have a right to life and liberty in New York City?
Sure.
The first question right now, but it's probably a bad example. But the question is, as former law enforcement officials, we know that when people are outside, if they're driving down the street, the highway, there is no inherent right to privacy once you put yourself in a public setting. There are numerous exceptions to that. But generally, when you put yourself in a public setting, you don't have, there's no implied right to privacy. And the question is, now that we all know, when you are walking down the street, certainly in a downtown area of any city, you know that if you're out for an hour, you've probably been captured on 200 cameras. I mean, let's let's clear about this. This is the way it is now. Security cameras, surveillance cameras, your image, your movements are captured. Question is, what happens? What is done with those images? Again, if you go back 50 years and you're at Disneyland and some person across the way in front of the Magic Castle takes a picture and you happen to be in that picture, you don't even know the person. In other words, there is no violation on that person's part of your rights. You're in a public setting, maybe a private property, but you're in a public setting and you're captured now on a Polaroid that's going to be up over their mantle for the rest of the century or whatever it is. Is that a violation of your rights? No. So there's no difference between that and, I think, in a security camera. The question is, now everything's recorded. And unlike that Polaroid 50 years ago, now that information can be disseminated to endless sources from the person who actually captured it. That's the question. And again, we talked about this a minute ago, about the courts being sluggish, things like this, and technology changes up quickly. It is, how and why is that information disseminated, and do you have any recourse at that point? Certainly, we can talk about commercial use and things like that. If someone's image is used to make money, that's a whole different story. But how it's used to actually manipulate your own life, and that's so deep in the weeds. It's so complicated. I certainly don't have the answer. But again, we know it's happening, and it's a very daunting situation. There's one more point. I want to let you respond to that if you like to. But there's another point, a couple points in this article I want to touch on that we've actually just scraped the surface of a minute ago. But go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, so Mark, when does it become a search? If you're walking down a street, and I get it, it is, you're out in public. So just as someone can walk by you and look at your face, there's a camera on a pole that could take a picture of you. When does that become a search? Is it then, should we be looking at what's done with the photo after it's captured? If it's run through a facial recognition database, is that something that should require a warrant to try to match that photo against another one? Or is it just, hey, this is the future where technology is going to be used? And I can talk about a couple cases in a few minutes where things kind of got off the rails because this technology was relied on too much. But I guess my question, Mark, is to you, when does it become a search? We couldn't look in their pockets as they're walking down the streets, but because we can see their face, is it fair game?
Yeah, it's a very difficult question. I don't pretend to have the answer, but I will say this. It certainly goes down that road of a search when law enforcement now seeks out specific data from a private entity because they're looking for a particular person or particular people or a particular vehicle. And I think that opens up the entire discussion about search and seizure is, what is the government? Because again, the Fourth Amendment, the 14th Amendment, they do not apply to private citizens, period. They do not apply to private citizens. It only applies to government officials, to law enforcement for sake of this conversation. And so, or an agent of the government. So that's the question. And you know, how broad can it be before it's not a search and seizure? Or how narrow does it have to be before it becomes search? And again, this is for people, hopefully, to hash out that have a higher level of legal training, of constitutional training than I do. But that's where it is. In other words, if a company is knowingly providing information that they have obtained legally through surveillance, their own property, things like this, to law enforcement, see, in my opinion, for search purposes, for investigative purposes, to me, that is now becoming an agent of the government, in my humble opinion. That's what I feel. And I think there's plenty of room for argument in a courtroom about whether or not that search, that perusal of of video, of camera footage is legal if the government, if law enforcement agency is specifically using it to search, to investigate a crime. That's how, that's where I fall on that. Again, but this is, these are very nuanced discussions and illegal, legal discussions.
Mark, have you heard of the story of Randall Caron Reed? He was a gentleman out of Atlanta. Let me tell his story. I think it was late 2022. So let's say 15 months ago, something like that. I think it was around Thanksgiving of 22. So yeah, maybe even less than that. He was stopped for a moving violation outside of Atlanta, and he was arrested for a charge out of Louisiana. The charge was stealing designer purses, or actually, I think it was specifically, it was buying designer handbags on a with a stolen credit card, with a stolen identity. Now, he had actually never been to Louisiana. The warrant was based on facial recognition technology, and he ended up in jail for 6 days and missed a week of work. So looking back at what happened, they had a grainy surveillance picture from a store surveillance video. The detective uploaded that photograph or part of that, a still from that video, into facial recognition technology, and it came back with a match. Now, in his affidavit or in his statement to get the warrant, he didn't say that he used facial recognition technology, and this is a common thing right now in law enforcement. What he said was a credible source identified the suspect as Randall Reed. So Reed gets pulled over. Now, actually, what I think had happened was they were never really able to, the officers that stopped him were never really able to give a clear answer onto why he was stopped. And I think actually what happened is not only was it facial recognition, it was then LPR technology, license plate reader technology, which identified his car. They then went looking for the car, found him and stopped him. And it was basically a felony arrest. Again, this is a case where technology has maybe gotten a little ahead of us. And even in the law enforcement realm, there aren't specific rules about how this technology is described. Should one be able to characterize facial recognition technology as a credible source and not tell a judge or a magistrate or a DA that this was facial recognition technology that was used?
No. I mean, in other words, to me, that's not telling the entire story. And if you're providing a court with an affidavit, in other words, you have to spell out all the facts, in my opinion. And so the short answer is no on that. The funny thing is, in other words, they were able to, I think, probably in good faith, identify the suspect here. In other words, to the best of their knowledge. And then you said make the stop with the LPR, the license plate reader, get a hit on that vehicle. In other words, and forgive me if I missed something, but did it turn out that this was a misidentification?
Yes.
It was not the guy. It wasn't the guy at all.
No. And so, the issue, I guess, go ahead, Mark.
No, that was it. Now, again, it's so complicated because even before any facial recognition technology, law enforcement misidentifies people, unfortunately, all the time. Yeah. So it's not a new phenomenon. The question is here with the new technology, it's how ubiquitous it can be. And this referring back to that passage I read from the article about the low success rate of the facial recognition. So we're dealing with a much larger scope now is the issue. But I think certainly that if an officer is writing his affidavit to a court to get a warrant, it's like, hey, just spell the whole thing out and say, here's how it worked. And they'll let the judge decide whether or not it's a legitimate investigative tool. But it's a great example. This is an absolutely tangible example of where it fails.
Yeah, and I think it failed in this case because there was really no other investigation done. There wasn't anything done to corroborate that he was even in the state at that time, right?
See, that's just lazy.
Right. So all that was, you know, and that's the issue. Like, even if it had been a witness identification, I would think there would have been more work done to corroborate that it was really the person, that he was in this state, whether they somehow get his phone and see if his phone was there or whatever, the normal steps you would take in an investigation.
And credit instead, card, was, ATM records.
Yeah. All, instead, all it things. Was just, hey, facial recognition hit. I'm going to call it a credible informant, and we're going to get an arrest warrant for this guy and move on. And yeah, it's a problematic prime
example. It's very problematic.
What I've seen, Mark, and I don't know if you came across this in looking at information for the show, is less effective or less efficient facial recognition, less effective the older you get. It struggles with women. It struggles with people of color. Yes. The success rate of positive identifications goes way down.
Yes.
And when there's companies selling this capability, I'm sure those are not things that they advertise. And it probably gives cops also a false sense of, I don't want to say security, but a false sense of how successful or how good this technology is.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Now, again, moving forward, for better or for worse, as far as your individual liberties and things like this, I would imagine that technology is going to continue to improve, be refined. Again, that may be a bad thing for humanity in general, but talking specifically about the technology itself, it will probably improve like most technologies do. But you're absolutely right. That was also in this article about the bias factor. And they use the word bias. I'd be more careful and say that it's inaccuracy mm-hmm. when it comes to different ethnicities. So that's 100% right. And of course, that raises all types of social and cultural and political issues if the technology is more or less effective depending on the pigment of your skin. It has to be consistent. It must mm-hmm. be consistent. And even if it's consistently inaccurate, it has to be at least that. It has to be just as inaccurate from this race to that race, from this gender to that gender, or we're not dealing with a tool that we should be touching in law enforcement. Another issue I wanted to touch on here, Bill, and this is related to the inaccuracy of it, is the potential for fraud. Again, this is from the same article out of Great Britain. And I'm going to just read this to you. And it really, to me, it brought home a very important point. Companies selling facial recognition software have compiled huge databases to power their algorithms. Controversial Clearview AI, for example, has 3 billion images scraped from Google, Facebook, YouTube, LinkedIn, and Venmo, probably more, it can search against. But these systems are a real security risk. Hackers have broken into databases containing facial scans used by banks, police departments, and defense firms in the past. Criminals can use this information to commit identity theft, harass, or stalk victims. Biometric data is not something you want to fall into the wrong hands. U.S. Senator Edward Markey, again, this is 2.5 years ago, said after Clearview had a data breach in 2020, quote, if your password gets breached, you can change your password. If your credit card number gets breached, you can cancel your card. But you can't change biometric information like your facial characteristics. I read this article, I said, this is an excellent point. Your face is always out there. And my face, that's not good for humanity. But anyway, but your face is always out there. You cannot go back and reset that password or your user word or things like that, or chain. I'm going to go from this bank to that bank or things like that. Once it's out there, it's out there. And now it can always be manipulated to a criminal's advantage. So I thought that was a very important point about fraud.
So Mark, are we saying that there is a way to somehow, let's say that biometric data is hacked. Is there a way to create like a false face signature and use it? Like, that's way over my head. What I mean?
Listen, it's over my head too. But I just think having about 3 or 4 brain cells to slap together, I think we can speculate that the answer is yes.
Yeah.
And again, this is really before, even though this company is called Clearwater AI 2.5 years ago, it's really before AI has exploded to the extent that it has now with creating images. There's a big scandal last week. I call it a scandal because, well, it is a scandal in so many ways. But with Google and with creating these images of founding fathers or revolutionary individuals, revolutionary era individuals. And if you saw that, you type in founding fathers and colonial and revolutionary heroes, and it was just populating images of everybody except for white people from 1790 colonial America. And it obviously it's ridiculous. It doesn't mean that there were no black people involved in the Revolutionary War. That's 100% not true either. I mean, some of the most brilliant fighters and heroes of the Revolutionary War were American blacks. And but we talk about the prominent figures, the one that are best known, in other words, in our own mind, the images that come up are George Washington and so forth and so on. The point is that AI was creating these images via Google's input. They've since changed that since the outrage last week, just for historic accuracy. But thinking about AI creating those images, there's nothing to say that it cannot recreate your image, my image, and manipulate our images. There's nothing that I'm aware of. There's no, let's put it this way, there's no reason I would believe that can't happen and probably won't happen. So you talk about the potential for fraud. I think it's huge with facial recognition.
Mark, I don't even know if we did this, but a couple weeks ago on the show, I said something inaccurate, not unusual.
Did you say that I was intelligent? Because that
no.
Would,
yeah. And I say, worse? You know, said something inaccurate. And normally it is what it is. But in this case, I had specifically asked this. I asked someone for an official statement about something, right? And they gave me an official statement and then I misquoted them. So obviously I wanted to correct that. I felt bad about that. And I talked to our producer, Anthony, and said, hey, can we just like kind of, I don't know what we might, just cut that word out. Just cut that word out. Mark, he used AI and he basically created a new sentence that I said. And if you listen to it, you cannot tell that it's not me. And he just put in what I should have said. And you can listen. I can listen to it myself. I had my wife listen to it. You cannot tell that it's not me. So I'm sure images are no different. And
no.
I think what it comes down to is what right do we have to our own voice and our own image today?
I think this cuts both ways. It's a great example that you give, Bill, about the edit on your show. And the reason I think it cuts both ways, what I mean by that is there's a teeter and totter to this. Once it becomes, and listen, we hope it doesn't get to this point, but once manipulation of images becomes more prevalent, I hope it doesn't happen, but I think it's likely that it will. What's going to happen is on the other end of that spectrum is the reliability, the trust that we used to put into a photograph. A picture tells 1,000 words. That phrase, that sentiment is going to go away. In other words, the value that we place on imagery, it's going to be diminished because we're going to have less and less faith that the image actually reflects reality. Look, even in 1933, when people went to see the original King Kong in the theater, RKO production, King Kong. And I watched that show growing up as a kid back in the 1960s, and I loved it. It terrified me. And I still watch it today with all the stop motion animation, things like this. But almost 100 years ago, when that movie was produced, it was absolutely revolutionary. It was a bigger leap of faith, so to speak. It was a deeper dive into science fiction than Star Wars was in 1977 for us as kids, because it just it went from zero to light speed as far as special effects. What's my point to all this? The point is that even though people sitting in that audience that were being awed and awed or terrified by this giant gorilla attacking this woman tied up to this post in the jungle and things like this and climbing the Empire State Building, as impactful as those images were, they still knew that it wasn't real. They knew that it wasn't real. They knew 100% it wasn't real. We've gotten to a point now where we cannot discern what's real and what is virtual.
Right. That's a great point. I know when you were talking about photos a minute ago. Have you heard of GeoSpy AI?
Don't believe so.
So GeoSpy, and people might ask, well, why are all these apps accessing the photos on your phone? Like, what possible information could they get from that? There's something called GeoSpy AI right now, where if you take a photo and drop it in that program, it will tell you where the photo is, what it's a photo of. Now, it's not using metadata, but it's actually recognizing what's in the photos, comparing it against a bank of a billion known photos where people have described what the scene is, where it is, or where they do have metadata. And then it's telling you, oh, this is on this street. The example I saw was someone sitting at an outdoor cafe. That photo was dropped in GeoSpy AI, and it says, this is in New York, here's the street, here's the restaurant. And guess what? Sure enough, it's correct. So I guess the point of me saying that is there's a whole new genre of cautions that people have to take if they want to protect themselves or be more secure. There's things that you never used to have to worry about that 15 years ago, that if you took a picture, someone would be able to collect data from it, know exactly where it is. And if you posted it on social media right now, know where you are, even if you didn't put a description of where it was, right, that they would be able to find you, locate you, know where you are instantly like that. And all that stuff is out there. So a couple more things on facial recognition, Mark. And I don't know, maybe I see people walking around with masks now, and now I wonder if they're, yeah, it's say no more, right?
Say no more.
I don't know. Wearing a mask, sunglasses, or even certain makeup can make facial recognition less accurate. There are actually now glasses that claim to disrupt AI recognition. Yeah, I haven't seen them actually, but I've read about that. Yeah, and I mean, that's really ownership issues. We've already talked about that. A lot of times when you sign up to a social media site, when you agree to certain policies, you're actually giving them the rights to all your pictures and your images.
Right.
So just know that too. Know what your rights are on social media apps about protecting your own image, and maybe get a pair of those glasses and wear them around. What else on facial recognition, Mark? Anything?
Well, as far as the glasses, I highly recommend the Groucho Marx. Yeah, put those on. For those of you who are under 45 years old, you may not get that joke, but anyway. Now, Bill, I think you've summed it up very well, and I think we've really covered it. It's out there. It's reality. No pun intended versus virtual, but it is reality. It's something to be aware of. I don't know where we're going to be tomorrow, next week, next month, next year with this stuff. I don't know. I don't think anybody really does, but it is now a reality of everyday life. Just be aware of it, and we can do right now.
Yeah, no, I would recommend people take those steps that we mentioned in the beginning of the show. And again, if you have an Android, please drop something in the comments about how people can do that on an Android. Know your phone.
Yes.
Know what it's collecting about you, and then know what it's doing with that information. And also watch those social media permissions. Who are you giving permission to use your image to? That wraps it up, folks. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. And we'll see you all next week. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.